I'm going to be focusing my discussion on the shift from build to consume of cloud services, or any IT services as such, the drivers and barriers to cloud adoption and acceptance, as well as how do we adapt to cloud 2.0 and what new technologies are cloud 2.0 bringing to the market. And then lastly, I'll briefly be touching on what public cloud services DataCentrix currently can offer. Marc Benioff, the founder and CEO of Salesforce, built quite a phenomenal business. Their software as a service business is probably one of the leading software as a service business in the market. And he sees cloud computing as the better way to do computing. So that's his view in terms of how he sees the market. A survey done by McKinsey in terms of IT as a service for the cloud and enterprise showed that there's quite a big transition from hybrid cloud services or to hybrid cloud services from on-premise environments, with cloud seeing the biggest adoption of that growth. Where cost mainly was the main driver in the past, that has changed for many of the organizations which they surveyed. They're rather looking at benefits and time to market and quality in terms of driving exceptions. Security and compliance always is a main concern, and that's something you always need to consider when you're moving to cloud services. The following slide basically shows what their survey found, is that traditional workloads as well as virtualized workloads, so traditional workloads on-premise physical infrastructure, as well as virtualized workloads on-premise, will be declining over the next period, where we'll see quite a big growth in dedicated clouds, as well as virtual private clouds, as well as public clouds. And obviously, we need to understand how do we adapt to those environments, how do we adapt to the changing environment. With a shift of building to consuming services, they predict that we're going to see a serious decline in traditional IT services. So that's traditional services where vendors provide hardware, where support is provided on-site. But at the same time, we'll see quite a big increase in cloud-related migration as well as management services. So there'll be a lot more focus on assisting customers in understanding how to migrate to a cloud environment, how to benefit from cloud environments, and actually how to use those cloud environments fully. A good example of this is something like Office 365. A lot of customers are using Office 365 and have got licenses for Office 365, but they're not using all the feature sets as they should be. They may be just using the email functionality. And there's quite a big set of other features available which is not being consumed currently. So it'll be a big drive in companies assisting organizations in making the best use of their cloud services. We'll also see a big increase as the cloud will be the default option for software deployments. And that a lot of vendors will release software only for cloud or in cloud first. So what that basically means is that if you don't have a strategy in terms of how you're going to consume cloud services, you might be left behind in terms of what services you can consume. Or you'll have to wait until those services are available for on-premise type deployments. Also, most organizations are looking at hyperscale cloud service providers, the likes of Azure, AWS, and so forth. But they're looking at a strategy where they're looking at a multi-cloud hybrid model, where they're looking at using tier 2 and tier 3 infrastructure service providers as well. And the reason why they're doing that is basically to ensure that they reduce their risk, as well as increase their flexibility and reduce cost in the process. It's important to understand which workloads are the best for which environment. When we look at drivers and barriers of cloud acceptance, performance is always a key issue. And it's absolutely important to understand how do your consumers consume the services. The best practice is to obviously have your data as close as possible to the end user to reduce latency to your applications. So when using services, it might be very important to understand, do you place it to the local cloud service provider or international cloud service provider, and how does that latency affect your line of business applications? Security is always a big concern, and it's important for organizations to understand how to secure their data in cloud environments. So it's important to understand what is the cloud provider's policies around security, how do they protect your data, if there's a data breach, what are their reactions around that, do they back up your data, as well as a lot of organizations find that moving sensitive data, as well as trade secret type information to cloud environments is maybe not their best practice. They rather feel more comfortable with using or keeping those environments on site and on premise. Cloud also benefits organizations with agility, where it speeds up their ability to take products to market, as well as they've got flexible capacity. So with the agility, an increase in agility, it's easier to deploy new systems, it's easier to do migrations, it's easier to have new projects implemented as quickly as possible. Looking at compliance is also obviously a big point which we need to consider. And please, these are just some of the points. There's obviously a lot more points, but some of the points I'd just like to focus on these slides. Compliance obviously is very important, specifically in certain industries. And it's important to understand what your industry regulations are saying regarding compliance. So compliance will determine where would be a best fit for your data, in a private cloud environment where it's isolated specifically only to yourself, or in a public cloud environment where you're running on shared infrastructure. Business requirements also become very important, where we see companies that are very agile, the likes of the finance industry, as well as healthcare industry, seeing more benefit in terms of cloud services because they've constantly got changing needs. Where more static businesses, like for instance your traditional manufacturing business, which has got more static approach to IT, might not see as much benefit from cloud services. Then also looking at operational efficiency, companies need to understand how they can do things better, how they can reuse those resources to actually be more competitive in their business. So redeploying resources to more business core functions than supporting IT infrastructure systems. There's also changes needed in an organization. So when adopting cloud services, there's a lot of changes that needs to happen to the current way that we do business. Organizational changes are more focused on business, where traditionally it was more focused on technology. So where technology determined what services we could offer, the business now says this is what we need, and we need to adapt to that. Also, we need to adapt to new ITIL processes, where ITIL processes need to be more agile and need to be able to deliver changes quicker in the environment. Service contracts also become more complex. So we've got more service contracts that we need to manage, with more SLAs, as well as some of the service contracts has got non-negotiable terms, especially the big cloud service providers. So it's important to go through those service contracts, understand what those clauses are, and understand how that has impact your business. Also, we see more focus on adding value with roles and responsibilities. So the roles and responsibilities are going to be becoming less technical and more business or service architecture orientated. Obviously, business needs to, and IT needs to adapt to skills to ensure that they can actually make use of these new IT services and cloud services. And then last but not least is also we need to look at new ways of managing cost. So we'll look at new cost management tools to ensure that we can actually understand what our costs are across the various environments. Just looking at modern IT investments, modern IT investments are moving more towards how do we manage IT subscriptions than how do we manage infrastructure. Obviously, infrastructure will always stay an integral part of the business, but the subscriptions of cloud services is very important. And we need to understand how do we build, how do we consume those services, how do we monitor them, how do we configure them, how do we make sure that they're secure, and actually being able to monitor that whole life cycle. Diane Green, the Senior Vice President of Google, has got quite an interesting view in terms of cloud 2.0. She said that cloud is data and understanding the data. So now that the companies have data, is how do they take advantage of that data to make sure that they can operate at a whole new level? So one of the examples of adapting to cloud 2.0 is machine learning. So basically with machine learning, companies need to identify patterns in their data and use algorithms to actually make best use of that data in their business applications. So with machine learning, we've got better insight into shared data. We're making sense of big data, as well as we're using that information to better understand our environment. The current leaders in that environment is currently Google Cloud Analytics, and they've written an open source software library called TensorFlow, which developers can freely use to develop these machine learning type applications. Just some use cases in terms of machine learning. We see Kaspersky is using that for data security. So they're using machine learning capabilities to detect new malware, as well as to predict security breaches. The financial trading industry is using machine learning to trade quicker and to take the human aspect out of the trade systems. So they can trade at high speeds and high volumes, which gives high profit. The healthcare industry is using computer-assisted diagnostics to early identify cancer in patients. Netflix, for instance, is using it to analyze activity of their users to determine what their users might want to watch next. As well as we're also seeing that developing in smart cars, where smart cars will adapt to the user that's actually driving the car. Serverless computing is also another technology which is coming to forth. And serverless computing is basically giving developers the ability to develop code without having to worry about the underlying infrastructure. So developers don't have to worry about the networking, they don't have to worry about starting up servers, loading operating systems, configuring networking, all the normal stuff that we do in an infrastructure environment. It also speeds up the way that they process services or develop services, as well as make services more robust by just calling certain functions as and when needed. The advantage of this is also they only pay for the services when they use. So in traditional infrastructure, you would have a server standing there just waiting, idling, waiting for something to happen. Where in serverless computing, they only pay for that function when it's actually called or executed. AWS Lambda and Azure Functions are the leaders in this market, and they've got quite extensive library of functions which developers can use for these environments. Some examples of serverless computing is where IBM with their OpenWhisk platform basically use image processing. And what they do is they take drones to take aerial photographs of the environment. And they use then cognitive APIs to analyze this data. So basically what that means is they can then use these photos to do infrastructure inspections by analyzing what in the environment is, as well as search and rescue activities, precision agriculture and mining, especially in the mining industry, this is used quite largely, to understand where's the best way places to actually place the equipment. As well as insurance companies are using this to document flood and fire risks prior to insuring various organizations. We're also seeing serverless computing playing a big role in real-time processing, where they, in conjunction with Internet of Things, use it, for instance, in home surveillance systems. So your home surveillance system will detect motion. It will then send that photo to their cloud service. That cloud service will trigger an event, which sends it to your cell phone to say, there has been movement in your environment. And you can then log onto your cell phone to see what the issue is. So those are just some of the examples that we see in the environment. Data-centric cloud services. We've invested the last 5 years in building quite a comprehensive list of infrastructure-related services. And our services are based around the following. Infrastructure service, where we basically provide a virtual private cloud for our customers to deploy virtual servers into. In that environment, we've got tiered storage, we provide snapshot backups, as well as we've got multiple data centers for high availability from which the customers can deploy. We've also got a hosted exchange based on Exchange 2013, offering mailbox sizes anything from 1 to 50 gig mailboxes. We offer Skype for Business, as well as SharePoint and OneDrive for Business. One of the new technologies that we've been what we're launching now is Veeam Backup as a Service, which gives us the ability to back up virtual servers within our cloud environment, as well as servers on-site into our public cloud. So that eliminates the requirement for companies to have off-site backups. So we basically become the off-site backup repository for our customers. We're also able to deliver Azure and Office 365 solutions through Microsoft Service Provider solutions, as well as Mimecast archiving with email branding and security. And we've also got various ERP systems running on our cloud. My apologies for starting so late today, so I'm not going to keep you here much longer. But if you want to see a demo of our cloud services, please come to our stand, and I'll be glad to show you what we can do. Thank you very much for your time. Appreciate it.